Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello, pod people, and welcome to Clash of the Titles, the show where two movies with something in common go head-to-head to figure out which one does it better. On Monday, we damaged our brains by experiencing Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, while today, that sunshine continues thanks to 500 Days of Summer.
Sorry.
I said I love the Smiths. To die by your side is such a heavenly way to die. I love them.
This is a story of boy meets girl. The boy, Tom Hansen, grew up believing that he'd never truly be happy until the day he met the one.
But which shines brightest? You're about to find out in Clash of the Titles.
Release the Kraken!
Hello, Clash Podders. I'm Chris Tilley.
I'm Vicky Crompton.
And I'm Alex. Look, we don't have to put a label on it, Zane.
Nice. Is he still doing that?
That's fine. I'd let him have it.
I'm keeping fine. That.
Yeah.
So, we love a review, don't we? Actually, scratch that. We love a nice review.
Yes.
So much so that we read one out every week in the hope that it'll encourage you, yes, you, to write us a nice review.
Please tell me it's the one from Lord Ramble.
Not yet.
Okay.
I'm working my way through them.
I just read that one this week and I was like, that is brilliant.
And is it?
It's so straight into the point.
Well, okay. Why don't you read it out now? You've set it up.
All right. You read yours and I'll read
no,
it.
No, we save them.
We don't get that many, do we?
We've got
we do.
We've got a lot recently. You do yours and then I'll do this one. Yours will be longer.
Okay, this is from Shmizv.
Oh, my favourite.
Not sure it's the real name. It's called The Goat. And they write, my favourite film podcast by a long way. It somehow makes Monday and Thursday two of the most exciting days of the week. You come for the fascinating stories behind your favourite movie production, but you stay to find out which third cousin of the hairdresser or the assistant stunt coordinator that Chris will pick for his MVW. thank you, Vicky, Alex and Chris. 5 stars.
Lovely.
And I will be making this person very happy when they hear my MVW this week. The Goat. You know about The Goat? It's a sort of come out of American sports calling someone or something The Goat.
No?
Greatest of all time.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I've got this one from Lord Ramble, which I'm guessing makes him a Football Ramble listener.
Well, Lord also... Ramble, I mean, if it's Lord Ramble, it's someone we know.
Right, yeah.
I can't think it is. Lord Ramble, who must have previously given us a review.
Yes.
That I haven't seen, but he goes, revised up to 5 out of 5. Good. Fun show.
Awesome. So I wonder what we were on before.
I imagine a high 3.
So thank you, Lord Ramble. And if you are our boss, we love you.
Great. Good to know we're getting better.
Okay. On Monday, Alex entered Jim Carrey's Twisted Mind. So today it's my turn to do the same with Joseph Gordon-Levitt. So let me take you on a journey. In this tale of deluded boy meets honest girl, Summer tells Tom she's just not that into him. And Tom hears Summer say that she's madly in love with him and can't wait to get married and have his babies, making Tom the film's villain. Though in spite of the fact that he's clearly obsessed and unstable, she keeps shagging him, making Summer the film's villain. No, it's Tom. Still Tom. Tom's the film's villain. The movie does sneakily position him as the hero by casting a puppy in the role and telling the story entirely from that puppy's point of view. confusing audiences by encouraging them to both empathise and sympathise with this seemingly adorable little guy. But no, Tom is still the villain in the end.
Hear, hear.
So when did you first see this, Vicky?
I can't remember, but it was around the time it came out. And I remember Summer being such a manic pixie dream girl that I didn't really ever want to watch it again because it just annoyed me. And she's not. And so we'll talk about it a lot later, but I'm very glad that we did it to watch it again.
It's a film that tricks you.
Yeah.
It's brilliant. Alex.
I read a long article that argues that she still very much is a manic pixie dream girl. So I'm interested in discussing that.
Sure.
But a lot of my opinion of this movie comes from the fact that this was my first watch.
Oh, great.
So
okay.
I have
no
nostalgia factor. No 2009 different lens to look at this through. I watched this in the cold, hard glare of 2022.
Interesting. And did you just watch it once this week?
I just watched it once.
Sure.
But interestingly, I watched it in two halves. I watched the first half one night and then the second half another night, which explains a lot about why I was a little bit disappointed with the second half to be discussed.
So you did a couple of 250 days?
Yeah.
Essentially.
Yeah.
Interesting. All right. So first time I watched this, I think it was at a preview. And I think personally, I was in Tom's headspace myself a little bit, which isn't a good place to be. So I was kind of rooting for him and I was rooting for them. And then afterwards, I thought maybe they were both arseholes and I wasn't sure if I liked the film. And I had some thoughts about the soundtrack, which I'll get into later. But about a year or so later, I watched it again and realised the film was actually a bit cleverer than me. And I hadn't quite picked up on what was being said and what they were doing. And so I liked it a lot more, but still found the excellent soundtrack quite annoying. But yeah, so I've gone through a journey with this film, I would say. So yeah, should we talk a bit about behind the scenes?
Sure.
Let's start with the writers, Scott Neustadter and Michael Weber, but specifically Scott. He wanted to write a relationship movie and he went to England. And this film is basically what happened to him in England with a girl called Jenny Beckman.
Oh, that's not very... See, this is not good.
This gets bad.
Okay, but he did show her the script, didn't he?
We haven't written the script yet, Alex.
Okay.
We're getting there. So while he was having this relationship with this girl, he was sending Michael emails trying to figure out whether she was into him, telling him what was going on. Michael was emailing back saying, "You sound deranged. You're not making any sense." But he returned home to America and it inspired by the Henry Miller quote that comes up, "If you want to get over someone, turn them into literature." He sat down and wrote this drama and he said it was catharsis. It was helping him to try and make sense of what happened. And he said he wrote it from the perspective of his own poisoned mind from movies and the music he grew up with. He also said he wanted to make fun of the manic pixie dream girl aesthetic, the concept. And he wanted to explore everyone thinking they're the hero of their own story. He didn't want to have a reliable narrator. He wanted to be stuck in this kid's mind. He wanted to be told from Tom's point of view. So the camera never enters a room unless Tom's there. We're stuck in his brain. And he wanted to be entirely one-sided. He did actually write a scene where Summer stops the film and explains something that really happened to show us what we're seeing isn't true. But he said it sort of broke the logic of the storytelling. So they dropped that. But his first draft was a 200-page first act.
What an angry man.
Yeah, it came out of a complete place of rage. Then he heard that she got engaged.
Wow.
And he said he was completely enraged, but also realised that that was the story he was telling. Mm. He was telling the story of her moving on. And so when they were done, he felt like it was too personal and too close to home. So he left it on his computer for months and then he got fired from his job and he said, "I was either moving back in with my parents or selling the script." So he started to show it to people and it suddenly got hot. There was interest in it. The Fox Searchlight bought it and the boss there, Peter Rice, had one note for them. Now, this is good studio note. He said, "At the end of Act 2, you have to make people believe that they're going to get back together. So write that." And that's where the train slash wedding scene comes from. And that's where the reality versus expectation sequence comes from, which obviously, really changes the movie. So they felt like it had a pop sensibility. So they wanted to get a music video director to potentially make it, which is how they found Mark Webb. And he even, when he got the gig, he directed a Maroon 5 video using the reality versus expectation concept, and which I watched earlier, and it's exactly the same, but he was sort of trialing it there. I'll talk about that when we get there. But yeah, to get the gig, Mark Webb, he made posters for each day, put them in chronological order on a wall to see where the characters
faith in love was at any point in the story. Had music playing, and Piece of Rice came into this pitch, and he got the gig. So they wanted New Standard wanted Joseph Gordon-Levitt from the moment he started writing it. So he got his wish. They all agreed that Zoe's a bit like Summer, and she thought that Summer was a bit like her. She called it a 3D character that plays in two dimensions in the context of the film. That's how she looked at it.
Mm. Okay.
She was also friends with Joseph Gordon-Levitt. They made a movie together and they'd done karaoke together loads. So that's nice. And there was nothing new in the movie. They wanted the clothes, the production design, the props to give it this timeless quality. So we'll discuss whether that works. Maybe we get some of that stuff, but it does certainly have a vision. You wanted to know about Jenny Beckman. So they were told that they had to get her clearance before they could get going with the film. So he hadn't spoken to her in a while and got in touch with her on Facebook and said, I've written a script about you. Will you read it? And is it okay?
You run!
Yeah, he said it was the most awkward thing he's ever had to do. And he did feel
Hello,
like a
police.
Psychopath. Yeah. But she read it and she said it was fine.
Uh-huh.
Now, this story goes to more places, but we'll get there later.
Does it relate to the fact that it says Jenny Beckman
is a
bitch at the start? Because
that's the thing I'm hung up on.
I'm massively hung up on that as well, because even if, like, Chris has just told us this story, you wouldn't know this story to sit down and watch the film.
Yeah.
But you do know it's a male writer.
Yeah.
And you watch that and then the male writer has put that on screen. Now, even without any of the backstory, you're like, that's ugly.
Yes.
That's such an ugly word anyway.
Yeah.
And to start a sentimental or whatever, anti-sentimental, a romantic movie with that is just the worst decision in the world.
Well, let's talk about the movie, because it starts with author's note. Following is a work of fiction. Any resemblance to persons living or dead is purely coincidental. Especially you, Jenny Beckman.
Fine.
Would have been fine.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Yeah.
I mean, it's weird, but if she's okayed it, it's fine. But then, as you say, to add bitch, all three of our changes this week is removing the word bitch from that sentence.
Oh, shit. Hang on. Jenny's on the phone. Yeah, I know I didn't put that in the script that I sent you. That was, I just sort of came up with that afterwards. That's not cool. Okay. Here's my lawyer.
So we start with day 488. They're sitting on a bench looking into each other's eyes, and we're told it's a story of boy meets girl via voiceover. How are you feeling about that voiceover, Vicky?
I'm not happy about it. I think it's overly long, etc., etc.
I didn't even look it up. Who is it?
What, the voiceover? Yeah. Well, it's, oh God, it's really famous.
Yeah.
You do know who it
no,
is.
No, I don't. I didn't look it up. Chris?
Look it up.
I don't know. I didn't care.
He sounds so familiar.
Yeah, it's because you're thinking of The Big Lebowski, but it isn't him. Is it? No. It's a bit like that, though.
It is a bit like that, yeah. I just assumed, you know, someone would know, bearing in mind.
Not me.
Sort of had job. Vaguely.
Well, if you're going to ask the question, look it up before you come here.
Yeah.
But then I don't need to ask the question. Then I just go, by the way, that voiceover is.
That's a lesson you've learned today.
If I said the voiceover is, you'd have said, we haven't got to that bit yet. I've got a bit about that coming up in 20 minutes.
That's true.
Day one. We learn that he wants to meet the one.
Yeah.
Because of sad British pop music and a misreading of The Graduate. What did he think the ending of The Graduate meant? It's pretty clear that this is going to be bad.
Yeah, which is good because it offsets. A lot of people want to find the one. It's not that weird.
No.
So when he's like, you're like, oh, are you a weirdo? Or are you not? Like, I'm not sure where I am with him, because he's like, I had this thing that I wanted to find the one and she cut her hair. So it's like, she's not interested in the one and he is. But it's like, so are tons of people. So...
Yeah, Summer is not interested in that because of the disintegration of her parents' marriage. But that cutting hair, I think, is because, you know, let's say it now, we never see Summer in this movie. All we ever see is his recollection of Summer, which is very biased and very skewed.
Mm.
But I think the cutting of the hair is him seeing her as someone who would love something and then get rid of it in a second.
Yes.
Which is what he feels like she's done to him. We're told it's not a love story. Then Us by Regina Spektor plays as we see home videos of their respective childhoods. And my feeling about the music in this film is it's too much telling me how to feel.
Yeah,
I don't like being smashed around the head with it. It's a great soundtrack. It's got wall-to-wall bangers, but I feel like I'm being told
it's
what to think and feel.
Yeah.
Isn't it a bit too cool, though?
It's too much.
Isn't it also just a bit like if you put some music on at a party, there'd be a person that's kind of going, oh, really? Have you just put this on? And this person is this movie. It's the movie version of someone going, seriously, this?
Yeah.
Why don't you put the Smiths on?
I think as well the Smiths means that I can understand why American people might be like, what's this Smiths? This is so miserable. But here, well, maybe, I'll tell you what, I'm speaking very personally. Mm. If someone's like, I'm really into the Smiths, that's a red flag. Like, I've never been a big Smiths fan. And I think people wear it as a badge to be like, because I'm really deep. Mm. And it's like, no, you're not. You just like this boring. I don't think it's boring and miserable. I think it's hugely overrated.
I'm really into the Smiths.
Of course you're fucking up, because you do it to get girls.
What would you do that? Whatever girl am I going to get because I like the Smiths?
The
that's not how the world
want.
Works.
That is the kind of girl you want. You want a girl that's like, did you say the Smiths? Mm. Brilliant.
Yeah, I've also, never. You know, Chris is into the Smiths. God, he's so deep.
I feel feelings.
It's just.
Yeah, sure. But then, sure, I like football. I listen to the Smiths.
Yeah, that's,
but that's the thing. I think people.
Yeah, I like a drink. People with the lads, but I do like the Smiths.
People don't. That's people not understanding the Smiths, though. Because
oh, here we go.
They're just funny, though, aren't they? It's not that deep. It's just comedy.
I mean, I don't know. And it's also, it's very much soured by who Morrissey is these days.
Oh, the last 5 years.
Yeah.
The last 5 years, it's in. I wouldn't dream of seeing him live
I know
now.
You
it's just horrendous.
I just felt like when I was growing up in the North, people were like, you, like there was a certain thing that you had to like the Smiths. And I was like, but I don't. And what will become of me?
Let me give you an idea of who listens to the Smiths. So we had a party at my house once, and one of my friends, who's still a very good friend of mine, was very into the Smiths at that point. And at this party, he sat in the corner with his Walkman on and listened to the Smiths all night and didn't speak to anyone.
Didn't
that is
anyone.
A Smiths fan.
I tell you, Smiths fan. My second gig I ever
Sorry,
went
listen to the Smiths
was Morrissey at the Failford Halls, and he did an encore and he did a Smith song, and a bloke ran up on stage. And kissed him and then punched him in the face. And I thought, doesn't that sum up a Smiths fan,
that's
really?
Very good,
I love
yeah.
you, but I hate you, and yeah. I can't understand these emotions. Anyway, day 290, and we've got the calendar back, flipping back and forth. Tom is smashing plates in his kitchen. He's potentially a violent human being. His little sister Rachel comes over to talk to him, and one of his friends says, it's Amanda Heller all over again. This isn't the first time he's acted like this. This isn't the first time he's behaved like this around a girl. He's a baddie. He says things were going well, then Summer said they should stop seeing each other and told him he's still her best friend.
Which is funny, isn't it? Because that's so manipulative. If you're going to break up, but again, it's his memory. If you're going to break up with someone, just break up with them. You can't say as they're leaving, but you're still my best friend. It's like, what, really? But I don't think we are.
As you say, potentially she didn't say that.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? Because it's difficult. It's really difficult. There's an article on Observer.com which goes in great detail about how the idea that the filmmakers are going, yeah, she's a manic pixie dream girl, but it's almost a sort of takedown of that because we're telling it from Tom's perspective. So it's his immature view of a woman. Mark Webb actually says she's Tom's view of a woman. He doesn't see her complexity, and the consequence for him is heartbreak.
Mm.
But the film does still have her do things that would make you, as the viewer, even taking into account the idea, like, this is from his perspective. But by the end, she is saying things that you're like, that's a shitty thing to do, Summer. Like,
she might not have said that.
I know she might not have done, but she, yeah.
Are you going to get upset about having to do work when watching a film again, like, on Monday?
Emotional work. Okay. Well, he doesn't listen to the Smiths, so it's not like he can tap into it and be like, oh, there's my feelings.
Go on. Carry on. We'll get to it.
He wants to get her back. We jump to day one. He's working at a greeting card company. Vicky, how do you feel about a romantic comedy greeting card company?
Love it. 100%. Massive pass. It's a non-job. It's not a real job.
Yep.
But it's also the non-job in the way that Eternal Sunshine invokes a non-job, which is like the cutesy thing of like, who names his hair dyes? Oh, no one. That's a real job. No one has this job, which is why it's perfect for a rom-com.
They make a joke about the job, and it's the reason they picked it. They wanted to have the least disposable thing he would be doing.
And that's
his dream job is the most, the opposite, sorry, the least disposable
it
thing.
It is kind of worth it for that joke.
Yeah. But
it doesn't make enough of it, though.
Yeah,
there's
I agree
so much more fun you can have with a greeting cards company, especially his meltdown in the boardroom later on, which I think is a bit of a fail.
Yeah,
sure,
they wrote 15 alternatives for that as well. I've got some of them.
Oh, good.
For a bit later.
I think as well, the thing is with the Manic Pixie Dream Girl stuff as well, like he's got this shit job that you know that in a traditional, no, a more sort of standard rom-com, the Manic Pixie Dream Girl helps the guy find his true self and true calling and all the rest of it. Mm. And so you expect Summer to do that. And she does do that, but just not in the way that she would. My ultimate manic pixie dream girl that I get cross about is Garden State.
Oh, yeah.
So that's a fucking doozy.
It's the worst
one.
It's the worst one.
But she exists.
I've never stood. Has anyone ever made this position in this part of the room before? I was like, oh, what are you doing? Natalie Portman, you can pull a lot off. You cannot do no one. Yeah. What? Who's shut up?
Yeah, but she's there to fix him. But it's funny. It's a good thing in this film that all those tropes do kick in but in not the way that you expect.
Well, he describes Summer here, and it's all to do with her appearance.
Yes.
It's all superficial. Yeah. He's wrong right from the
But that's
word
why
go.
The casting's so genius, because you know that girl, the way she looked, this faux vintage bullshit, the fucking massive fringe, all of that. Who sings fucking Sugartown at karaoke? No one. A nutter does that. But
Zooey Deschanel sings
well,
that.
Well, obviously.
She got to pick her song.
Yeah, but then she's got no female friends for that reason.
How do you know Zooey Deschanel's got no female friends?
No, I mean Summer.
Okay.
That is the dark side of this movie. Because of this movie, like, the manic pixie dream girl trope transcended her role in this movie, and Zooey Deschanel in real life, the human being, became like the representation of being a manic pixie dream girl, which is just an insane concept that a real human being, not a character in a movie, people could go, Zooey Deschanel's a manic pixie dream girl. What are you saying?
How many episodes of New Girl did she do? That would have contributed to it.
Yeah, but I mean, they kind of play on it in that, where there's a character in that who goes, do you need your blankie? She's like, I've never said blankie.
But you see Zooey Deschanel and you think she will solve all your problems just by looking at her. And that's what Tom thinks. And so you think it as well. So which is why the film plays with you a bit, because she doesn't do anything, but she looks like the kind of girl that's going to save your life.
Yeah.
I think.
So they're in a lift together. He's listening to The Smiths.
Yeah.
She loves The Smiths. Bang. Day 8. Office party. He calls her anal. There's a good spit take there.
It's not a good spit take.
I think it's a good one.
I think it's a stupid joke. I think it's a good joke, but she wouldn't say that. Like, but then it's his memory, I guess, so it's fine. But she's like, oh, they call me anal girl. Why have you said, like, fine, whatever. Are you that stupid that you don't know what that means? Like, I don't know.
You need more spray with a spit take. There's not enough spray. It sort of glubs back into the glass.
He said the screenwriter said he added in stuff like fairy tale bird, the spit take, the narrator. He said, I wanted a bunch of fun things to chuck in there because otherwise it's just a bloke whining. Him, I think he was feeling quite self-conscious. So Tom starts drawing a building, then gives up. We'll come back to that later. Day 154. It tells his friends he's in love with her. They keep telling him, no, you're not. He can't hear it. He's not listening to his friends. Everyone is telling him this is wrong. Day 11, he tells Rachel, his sister, how great she is while they're playing Wii tennis. And she says, just because you like the same things doesn't make her your soulmate.
Yeah.
Which I think is the key line in the movie, probably. Yeah. Mm. He's got a... Scott has a sister who's 11 years younger than him who was saying similar things. So
really?
All very autobiographical.
I don't think little girls like that exist, but fine.
I think Chloe Moretz was like that.
Well, that's true, actually. If she's like, I'm the actor, Chloe Moretz. made sense.
I went on the set of Kick-Ass, the first movie, which was made when this came out.
They should have leaned into it and made her have her be a child star. That would just made more... Like, why do you speak so unnaturally grown up? Oh, because I'm a child star. Perfect.
Yeah.
I'm just not a normal
dog. I did feel like I was talking to a 60-year-old woman when I that day.
What's her face from Miracle on 34th Street?
Oh, yeah.
Same thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mara Wilson.
Yes.
Or Natalie Wood.
No, Mara Wilson.
The first one.
Day 22. It's off because she told him her weekend was good. That is verbatim something that Newstander said, and Wibber called him crazy and said they should write it down. It's worrying. Scott, I'm worried about you.
What do you mean?
So he'd asked this girl, Jenny Beckman, how her weekend was. She said it was good, and he... Emailed his writing partner and said, it's off. She said her weekend was good. Have you ever
been that infatuated someone that you do read?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
100%, yeah.
So these are real things. It doesn't make... No, we're not psychopaths.
I don't know.
for thinking that.
Like, overthinking relationship stuff. Yeah.
I think he's a bit old. The problem with like the character, he's just a bit too old to still be thinking like that. These are sort of like... teenage, like at most early 20s behavior tropes. Like he's older than that in this movie. And by that point, you've gone, God, I'm being ridiculous. Whereas as a kid, if they'd aged him down 5-10 years, you'd be like, yeah, I was like that at that age. I used to think the most nuts things when a girl said something like,
yeah, I had a great week. And I'd be like, what the fuck? What a fucking thing to say.
I'm just confused. Isn't Joseph Gordon-Levitt still 15? I'm confused.
Yeah, he is actually.
How old are they supposed to be then? I thought mid-20s.
Mid-20s maybe.
I'd put them as a little bit older, late 20s. But I think, you know, around 20, 21, you start to realise what's ridiculous.
It's difficult, isn't it? Because when you're in the mess like that, you do obsess over little things. But your friends actually, well, in my experience, they're like, no one gives a shit, do they? So you're like, oh, this thing happened. And then he said this. And they're like, all right, I don't know, whatever. We don't care. But if your friends were going to say anything, they'd be like, okay, great. Well, why don't you just ask him out then? Or why don't you just do something? I've never been in a situation where someone's gone, you're crazy. Like, it doesn't mean anything.
It's a good litmus test for real friendship. I think real friends are people who go, I honestly don't care.
Yeah.
People who go, tell me more. Okay, let's try and analyse this. It's like, I don't want to be your friend anymore. You're my friend if you go, fuck off.
But just say, you know, I'm here if you need me, but I don't give a shit. Like, don't bring it anywhere near me.
Day 28 is when they do the karaoke. And she's pretty clear here. She likes being on her own. She doesn't believe in love.
So this makes no sense because why did the film do the thing where he's like, I believe in the one? And all she needs to do is go, I don't believe in the one. But to say, I don't believe in love, it's like, do you have no parents, no friends, no love? You don't love animals. There's nothing in your life that makes you love anything. That's weird.
I think you'd find a lot of people who understand the concept of sort of love in that sense. Yeah. I think she's making a real clear differentiation between falling in love with someone and the idea of romantic love as opposed to the love you feel for like a cat or something. I think they're different kinds of love.
Yeah, because she refers to it as a fantasy.
Mm. Okay.
So I think that's what she
but
means.
She says, I don't believe in love.
She means between a partner and her.
Okay.
She's talking specifically about the love that comes from a relationship.
Because she's answering the question, what happens if you fall in love?
Okay. Okay. I just thought it was a bit extreme.
Mm. It's not like chocolate or...
But friends. Does she not have any friends?
Ben and Jerry's cookie dough.
Does she not love her mum and dad? And you know, love exists because she can feel that love.
But again, she's being very specific. Because I used to say that for a very long time. I was like, because I hadn't experienced it in relationships. But it's specific to relationship love. Like you're with people and you sort of... Because of how we're told in movies, like it's fucking like amazing thing.
Yeah.
And you sort of wait for that, especially when you've watched too many fucking movies and it never happens. And you sort of like, what is love?
Okay. I get it. I suppose
a very cool thing to say as well.
What, to your partner? I don't think so.
Not to your partner, but to people. Like, no, definitely not to your partner. Love?
Oh, no, you should have asked fucking 2 years ago, love.
What?
Absolutely not.
What a load of bullshit.
But we're friends, though.
You're my best friend.
Let's take a quick break and we'll come back with some inappropriate touching in the office.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And we're back, day 31. She kisses him by the photocopier. That would not fly now.
No.
No heavy petting
in
the office.
Sorry, I mean, no.
No heavy petting in the studio, Alex. I've told you before.
I mean...
Remove your hand.
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know. It works in the movie.
It was a different time.
It was a different time, yeah.
Day 282, they're looking around IKEA pretending it's their home. Well, but this is where it's bad. She isn't amused by him claiming that their sink is broken.
Yes.
And then day 35, they're looking around IKEA pretending it's their home and she is amused by him.
She thinks that's fucking hilarious.
She makes the sink joke the first time around.
It's not even good. She's not even good at it. It's just like, oh, like if you're going to improv, let's go somewhere. Let's really...
I probably don't go call an Asian family. There's some Chinese people in
no,
our
let's
kitchen.
Not do that.
But she says, I'm really
it's
not,
a different time.
I'm really not looking for anything serious, she tells Tim. I mean, over and over again, it's smashing us around the head with it, actually.
I mean, at this point, you just feel gutted for him. I think if you're going to say something like that to someone, and also it's an inversion of more common tropes where a man is saying to a woman who's desperate for a commitment, I can't commit at that level right now and all of that. And you get these tropes of a very needy woman. So you recognise it and it's like, oh, that's fun to see it the other way around. There's plenty of women that feel like that. But it is a bit brutal that she does it in IKEA because it's a public space.
Why are they in IKEA?
Yeah, I don't know.
Why are they in IKEA? I thought, oh, wow, they're moving in together. Yeah. They're not. And so it's like, it's just like...
It's a cutesy romantic comedy thing to do.
Well, she's just moved to the city.
Have
so
you
maybe...
fucking been to IKEA?
Yeah.
It is like... They're always on industrial estate.
Nice.
So first of all, you are getting a taxi. You're like, what are we going to do for this day? Let's get a cab to an industrial estate and go to IKEA because then we can do some sort of crap jokes as we walk round.
Meatballs?
Yeah.
That's good. The hot dogs.
Yeah.
Oh, shit, yeah.
And that cheesecake thing.
Yeah.
That's worth it.
Again, if you're going to IKEA for the food, there's something wrong. This is not a date. That's not a date.
Can you imagine?
The food isn't that good.
And it's so cheap. It's like, I'll get this.
And also, once you've done all the furniture jokes, to get out, you still have to walk through that bit with like so a warehouse with just like wood.
Yeah, it's not funny anymore, is it?
They shag.
Sponsored it. Definitely there was some money changed hands there. You want to use IKEA?
They shag and we've got The Morning After. You Make My Dreams by Daryl Hall and John Oates.
Well, yeah, because this is so good because it's a bit gross because he's like, I got laid or she got laid or we got laid, whatever. But it's one of the better songs.
Thank
so...
God they don't say that.
Yeah. I don't like musicals, so it's the exception that proves the rule. I think this bit is brilliant.
Yeah, so when they were working on the script, the
really
first
like
thing
it.
They did was make a list of great moments in a relationship and one of them was the first time you have sex.
Incorrect. It's the second time and everybody knows that. You can
They might have done it twice. They might have done it twice.
Yeah, the first no. Just that is just clear the like clear
I,
the. Decks.
I argue it's about a year in when regular sex has got a bit boring. So it's like, hello, let's mix things.
Remember
up.
This? Yeah.
No, it is. It is the first time.
It's not.
Of course, it is.
No,
as long as it's not gone bad, it's good.
Yeah, first time's special.
Yeah, but no.
What has you're doing
happened?
It wrong.
Well, possibly. I mean, second time. Everyone can relax the second time round.
Are you actually saying that on more than one occasion, in more than one relationship, the second time you've had sex with that person has been better than the first time? Like, statistically, empirically, do you have evidence to support that?
Evidence? You want me to bring him in?
No, you're inside you. Like, do you remember
if you
it
could
always
next week.
Better the second time?
I just think, I think like Chris says, if the second time is immediately, more or less immediately after the first, then it is the second time,
I'm talking 15 minutes.
50, sure, whatever. Fine, an amount of time. In the morning, actually.
Wait, are you now saying the second time?
No.
All right, exactly. Exactly, no, it's the first. Wait, are we lumping multiple intercourses take place on the same night as the first time, though?
Yes, I'm just splitting the difference a little bit. So I'm saying...
I didn't realise you... I thought
you
were talking
occasion,
about like a week later.
As in the night, yeah, great, because it's first time, but not the literal first time. I
right,
maybe
okay.
I'm not changing my mind. That's
yeah, I mean, you are. You are. So what we mean is the first night, regardless of how many times you make love, is the best.
It's not the best. Oh, God, this is going on forever.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah, it's not the best ever. It's like you say, once you get your eye in, yeah. You know what you're doing.
If your eye's in, you're not doing literally. It wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, there we go.
Keep eyes out of it. Let me...
Don't look down there.
I wanted. Where were you looking?
I mean,
above her, like, above her head. Just get it done.
I just mean, depending on your positioning, and there are certain positions where it's like eyes closed. Here we go.
Here we go. Hood up.
Scarf on.
Have I got provisions? Yeah. Could be down here a while. Are you checking your foot? No.
Are you eating a sandwich?
We done?
Chris, I'm so sorry. Well, yeah,
it's fine.
Okay, and we're flitting back to minute 30 on the show, just like the structure
of
the
film. I want to describe the musical sequence for a reason. So he looks in a car window and the reflection is Han Solo. Everyone's greeting him and high-fiving him in the park. Then they all start dancing. Only Zoe wears blue because of the blue in her eyes. All through this film, she's the only person who wears blue, apart from this scene where the whole world turns blue.
Oh, that's cute.
And it ends with the blue bird landing on his shoulder. So, sad bit of news about this scene. Hall and Oates were going to be in it until a week before one of them pulled out. They were going to be dancing with him.
Brilliant.
That would have been amazing. Also, they shot a sad version of it, an alternate version for later in the film when he's down. And what that was, it was the same song, but he's having the worst day ever. So there's people smashing into him. His reflection is him rather than Han Solo. It should have been the Emperor, I think. The fountain switches off when he walks past it. The marching band boo him and the bluebird shits on him.
So because of bad sex?
It's like Bittersweet Symphony versus Vindaloo.
Kind of, yeah. And it's a great sequence. You can see it online. They said it sucked the air out of the movie. So I'm kind of gutted. So anyway, this happy day ends with him in the lift smiling. Cuts to day 303. He's in the lift and he's not smiling. He's miserable. He's working on getting her back, but she emails him asking if he's ready to be friends. So this is day 303. It's already over at this point. He gatekeeps about Octopus's Garden being the best Beatles song. He seems like a knob there.
I mean, it isn't.
No.
Just like,
everyone's allowed to have their favourite, Alex.
It feels like something someone would say to be contrary,
yes,
though.
The whole Ringo Starr thing does, to be honest.
Totally.
What, she likes Ringo?
Yeah.
It's not that she likes him, it's that he's the best Beatle. Or her favourite, which is it?
I don't know.
I think she says he's the best.
But it's, you know.
Yeah, wrong. He's fourth best, isn't he?
Yeah.
Actually, he's Pete Best above him.
Probably.
There's some stuff about buildings, looking up at buildings, saying that LA is a beautiful city. I don't know. We learn that this bench is his favourite spot in the city. He does some architecture on her arm.
Yeah, annoying.
Also, Marge Simpson, she used the Ringo thing. She was Marge Simpson's favourite Beatle was Ringo, and she paints a picture of him and then he doesn't get it until much later.
Oh, that just makes you love Marge. So it doesn't quite work. Oh, funny.
Do you ever see the video of Ringo warning people to stop sending him fan mail?
No.
Yeah, he's really aggressive and it's weird. He goes, I'm warning you, stop sending this. I'm warning you with peace and love, I'm warning you. It's like, wow, what are you talking about?
What?
This is terrifying.
That's brilliant.
It's like the fan hitting Morrissey. Wow.
It is. Oh, it is. Day 109, the night everything changed. So her wall comes down. She's telling him stuff she hasn't told anyone before. And I think it's so clever, this scene.
Yeah.
Because while she's telling him the stuff, her voice fades out. And the narrator's voice comes in with him asking himself if anyone has ever made it that far with her before. So he stops listening to her and it's all about him.
It's so good because it's so recognisable when you're obsessed with a person, in my case a man, and you just do that thing where you're, like, you're just desperate for like morsels of anything, like crumbs from the table. And you get told something. You see it in films as well, but you get told something and you're like, oh, fuck, I am special because someone's told me this. And it's such a manipulative play to be like, I've actually never told anybody this before. Insert fucking boring dream memory here. Like, not even anything good. Like, tell me something juicy. But anyone talking about dreams, always horrendously boring. It's good that he stops listening to her. But it's brilliant. I don't know if she's doing it. Does she know she's doing it? Where she's like, I'm going to reel him in a little bit by being like, look inside. And, you know, I contain multitudes kind of thing. I loved it.
Well, it doesn't matter because he's not listening to her anyway.
No. What's interesting in this scene is the narrator going, and it was the next six words that changed everything. And she says, I've never told anybody that before, which is six words. And he says, I guess I'm not just anybody, which is also six words.
Nice.
So you're like, I wonder which six words the narrator is referring to. Or is it both? Is it the fact she says six words and he thinks, oh my God, I'm in here. And he says, I guess I'm not just anybody. And she realizes, fuck, he's into me too much. Yeah. I need to pull back from this relationship.
Yeah.
Day 259, the business douchebag chats her up at the bar. This is the first sign of trouble in the correct chronology, day 259, where it's obvious that the stuff's going wrong. And Tom punches the guy, which I feel like is his Will Smith moment.
Yes.
Wow, is that a thing now? Are we already there?
I guess so.
Yep.
I was gutted that we didn't get to throw it back to you in the studio during the Oscar coverage.
Who was I? The one year we just do a build-up show and leave the ceremony to itself, and then Will Smith decides to go full slappy.
What would you have done? Yeah. I'm just imagining Alex just staring at the screen with his eyes wide open for ages.
Yeah, probably. I would have done that.
For comedic value.
Yes. That's not what I thought, but yes.
Yeah. Have you discussed it on the show?
No, we haven't. No.
I mean, what on earth was happening?
I don't know.
What on earth?
I find it very upsetting.
Yeah.
It is.
Thinking about it, watching it, it's just really heartbreaking.
Yeah. I mean, he'll be back. I give it 18 months, 2 years. He'll be drip-fed back into the world in a kind of, like, you know, changed, remorseful, different kind of Will.
Of course, they love a hero's journey. But how, I mean, am I going to be able to get over it watching his films?
Well, I don't think we'll be seeing the same kind of films. Because the thing is, the movies that, you know, like the Bad Boys franchise, for example, I'm not watching Mike Lowry. I'm not going to see Will Smith play Mike Lowry. I'm going to see Will Smith be Will Smith because I believe Will Smith is a fun, wisecracking guy.
Yes.
And he's just been given a character's name. But I'm watching Will Smith.
100%.
Oh, that's gone.
Yeah.
Oh, that's not there anymore.
Yeah.
Wow. So I think, you know, it'll be slow. But have you heard some people going, but do you think it was important? It was done on purpose? There is still a theory that it was like
ignore.
Done. Yeah, exactly.
Ignore. I did listen to a podcast in January. It was Dana Carvey interviewing Chris Rock. And he was saying on that when he was young, he got bullied a lot. And one day he struck back and nearly killed his bully with a brick. Mm. And it got so serious that his family were nearly going to get him out of the state. And the guy survived. And he said, since that day, I've been too frightened to ever lose my temper. I haven't lost my temper since. He said, I tend to let people walk all over me because I know I've got this rage inside of me that I've got to control. Mm. And so it's interesting watching that, his reaction with that knowledge that he's got a screw loose when it comes to violence.
Yeah, because he doesn't do anything.
No, he won't do anything.
Yeah. I just wonder, I think, you know, because he is someone, like, because he's a showman, and you can only be like that big a showman, like on show all the time for a certain period of time before you need to go and close the door and recharge, you know. And I think because Jada's taken a decision to sort of put everything on the table with her red table talks and everything and like talk about the family and be really very open, I wonder if he's not able anymore to sort of like have that recharge time. Because on the one hand, he's the showman, and then he goes home and he's like, let's talk about our marriage.
Yeah.
And like, you know,
on the telly.
I think his brain just went and like he just like lost it for a moment of madness.
It made me think of it though, you're right, because Summer doesn't like the violence that she's seen.
Yes.
And so she's got this thing that I was sorting it out myself.
Yeah, look after myself. Yeah. And he's all, I got my ass kicked for you.
Yeah, exactly. And he hits him when he slags Tom off in particular. It's not instantly when he keeps hassling her about the drink.
Mm.
But there were so many articles written about the reaction to Will Smith. It's like, some people say, why would you not like it? Your man was sticking up for you. And it's like that. And it is such a complicated thing. Like the way that you are brought up and just... I don't have a clear, concise or like sort of definitive thing about what I would expect in that situation. I don't like violence because violence in the world can come back on you kind of thing. Like, I don't think Tom is ever going to hit Summer. He doesn't seem like that sort of person that we see. Mm. But she's like, I don't like it because if you think that's a reasonable reaction to something, that can come back on me in many other ways on the street or you know, in my life. And that's why you have that curl of disgust. You're like, I don't want that anywhere near me.
Mm.
And then there is a weird part of you that's like, what would you do if someone did that to me in a bar? It's just a weird feeling brought up by Will Smith and this scene.
Mm-hmm. 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 So they have an argument. She tells him, we're just friends. Again, he loses it. It's more than friendship for him. She doesn't want a relationship and he storms off and he goes to bed and she shows up at his door and apologises. They cut a scene here where he storms out of her apartment and then goes back to try and finish the argument and has to get buzzed up. And by the time he's got up there, he forgot what he was going to say, which is something that Scott did
in
real life.
And again, it's his memory. But I think when she apologises for being cross about the violence, I don't think she should apologise. I think that should be her red line. Again, it's his memory. So she's like, I'm not going to say sorry for that, because I don't find that acceptable. And when she says to him with his lips, she says, does it hurt? And it's like, you are like a mother in him, or you're fetishizing that a little bit, that it is quite attractive to you that he got hit in the face for, in quote marks, for you. But that does sort of typify how complicated it is to feel like that.
Mm. Okay, so this is interesting. I was going to introduce this later, but I told you I watched this movie in two halves. So I watched the first half, and it's, it was all very much from Tom's perspective. It is Tom, isn't it? Yeah, Tom.
Yeah.
And then I was like, it's late. We'll pick it up tomorrow. And Nettie, who'd been championing this movie, said the second half is even better because you see things from Summer's perspective. Mm. So in my head, I was like, oh my God, what a genius film this is going to be. So I am going to see these exact scenes replayed, how they happened from Summer's point of view. So you'd see the bar scene and you'd see the way it actually happened and how it was more Tom's fault than hers. You'd see her arriving at the apartment door and like what she actually said, as opposed to like, I'm sorry for getting angry. And so I was expecting a completely different movie to what the second half of this bloody movie actually is.
Okay. But we don't ever see anything from Summer's point of view.
Which is, I think, a mistake. I think that, to me, is an interesting film. Yeah. To watch the same events from two different people's point of view.
Yeah. I mean, it's been done to death before. But He Said, She Said, it's a Kevin Bacon film. And
didn't see it.
Yeah. Any of films that have done that. Rashanon. It's not about a relationship.
Not seen it.
No.
Sounds good, though.
It's very good, yeah, but it's about a sexual assault. Oh. So she doesn't want to label things. He needs consistency. He wants to know she won't feel differently one day. She can't promise that, but they start kissing, and she starts telling him about her past boyfriends, the rower, the singer, the girl, the Italian with the big dick called Puma.
Why does a Puma have a big dick?
Exactly, Vicky.
Why is it, I don't keep pumas.
Does it? They say it like this is a thing.
And no, not that it's
it would be a racehorse. I mean, a stallion is the big thing.
Also, the Italian stallion. It's all in front of you.
That's the metaphor or whatever, isn't it?
Maybe pumas do.
Yeah, but it's just not a thing.
Don't call it a puma.
I didn't mean to.
I'm
so sorry. I didn't mean to.
Puma.
She's quoting the film. Yeah, it's just good. I wanted to check. This wasn't an analogy that I'd never heard of.
Oh, because no one's ever said it to you.
Well, no, I've been called a racehorse, but not a puma.
Because you fell at the first hurdle.
Very good. Very good.
No, I've been called a puma, though.
So,
even though I don't know what it means, but yeah. I have.
They're in a park.
Covered in fur.
After this weird conversation, they're in a park saying the word penis louder than each other.
That's your manic pixie dream girl moment.
It's Dick and Dom.
It's Dick and Dom.
Yeah.
I mean, were they watching Dick and Dom?
they could have
used bogeys.
Oh, bogeys. I couldn't remember. Did they say bollocks?
It took me a while to remember it's bogeys.
On CBBC? No, they didn't say bollocks.
I preferred that they said bollocks. I find bogeys such a disgusting word.
Yeah, kids might have a problem with it.
What, bollocks?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because of that. And here ends Chris's job as a TV producer for Saturday Morning Children.
Bollocks! Fuck off! So we've got another one of these things comparing day 191. They're at the cinema watching Vagiant.
Vagiant.
Part vampire, part giant. And they're laughing. Then day 314, he's in the cinema on his own. He's not laughing. He's watching a friend art house drama with a clown and a balloon.
Is it? But it's sleep, though, isn't he? Because he's dreaming, because he's in the movies.
So yes, it's a spoof of the 70s. It turns into sort of a Zucker Brothers parody here, though, which I wasn't a fan of.
I quite like it.
Do you?
Yeah, it's just short enough. And I think Joseph Gordon-Levitt is good enough in it.
Yeah, and this was, when it came to him, this was a very comedic scene, and he told them, encouraged them to make it a bit sadder, and so that's what they rewrote it for him. Now, the meltdown, you mentioned Alex in the boardroom, day 321. He has written a card that says, "Roses are red, violets are blue, fuck you, whore."
Not nice.
That's pretty hardcore, isn't it?
Yeah.
So they had to come up with 15 alternatives because of the F word. They didn't know if they could use the F bomb there.
This is in the office.
Yes.
With
Clark Gregg.
Yeah.
And the only one they mentioned on the commentary is roses are red, violets are blue, I'm right behind you.
Jesus Christ.
I quite like that.
That's better.
I think it's better than whore.
No, it's super. I mean, it's meant to be super threatening. Imagine if you got that.
Mm. Yeah.
There's something wrong with this man. Oh, hi, Jenny. I've written a film about you.
I don't think either card is going to get made.
That's not the suggestion here.
Do we go with fuck you, whore, or I'm right behind you?
But it is funny when he says to him, I think you should channel your energies into funeral and grief, misery, sadness, loss of faith, no reason to live.
Yeah, that's
dark. Day 167, he's absolutely nailing it at work back when he's happy. Day 345, he's on a blind date and he's such a knob, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's not sure if Summer's evil and emotionless or a robot. Mm.
But it is a little bit of a blind spot of the writer that the date's not going very well. She's bored.
Yep.
And yet she still follows into the karaoke bar. Mm. A normal woman would be like, I'm going to go now because there's no spark or whatever. But why she follows into the karaoke bar doesn't make any sense.
I agree. But she does make the point. She never cheated on you. She never took advantage of you. She told you up front that she didn't want a boyfriend. What's the issue?
Yes, she's right.
So it's setting out the film stall yet again. I must have missed all this the first time I watched it. We've got the wedding scene now. And so he sort of has a lovely, or his memory in him anyway, it's lovely. They dance, they get on with each other. She sleeps on his shoulder on the way back. Then we get these talking heads.
Yeah.
Which I think is quite neat. I don't know if the film needs it, but it's all everyone describing their perfect woman. And they're all making the point that they don't want a fantasy, they want a real person.
Yeah.
Whereas they're talking about reality, whereas when it's Tom's turn, he says nothing because he can't answer that question because he still wants the fantasy.
Mm.
He doesn't understand that he needs a real person.
Yeah.
So it's clever. I just don't know if it's necessary. Then we've got the party at her place. Expectations versus reality.
Clever.
So that Maroon 5 video is called Good Night, Good Night. Came out in 2008. I've never heard the song, but it's a really clever video about the beginning and end of a relationship using the split screen.
They've got a song called Good Night, Good Night. Mm. There's a Hot, Hot Heat song called Good Night, Good Night as well.
Nearly interesting. Mm. Hero, Hero by Regina.
I was really into Hot Hot.
Good night,
good night. Yeah, that was good as well.
I like that.
Bandages on my head, on my knife for you.
So Regina Spektor plays, not Hot Hot Heat. But it's a super clever sequence. The party gets dramatically worse for him. He gets drunk rather than kissing her, which he thinks he's going to. He sees her engagement ring. And I think it's a great choice to not have them have it out there. He just leaves.
Why did she invite him to her engagement party?
Is it an engagement party?
I think it is. I think there's enough happening there that, as the viewer, you could assume it was an engagement party because it's not long after the wedding. It's the Friday after the wedding.
Mm.
And she didn't have a ring at the wedding.
Mm.
So
yes,
you'd assume that it is the engagement party.
True.
What on earth, you know, even though this is all told from Tom's perspective, what on earth is Summer doing inviting him to that party, bearing in mind the history they have and what she knows about
him? I agree. And I think if there's any criticism of Summer, it's that. And also, like, it must be very obvious that he's madly in love with her.
Mm-hmm.
She's very clear that she's not in love with him. At some point, she needs to sever. She needs to cut ties and stop having sex with him maybe a bit sooner. Like, I think that's where, whoever she is, I think that's where she's gone wrong on this side of things.
Sure, but I think she has stopped having sex with him at that point. I mean, clearly
she
the has. Wedding...
Oh, yes, by this point she has.
The wedding that they went to, like, she hasn't seen him for a while. You learn that from the conversation on the train. And the party shortly after that. But she should not be inviting him to that party.
Agreed.
So it's all Summer's fault!
He gets drunk for a few days. Delivers a miserable speech at work, has a big meltdown.
And that's the scene I was actually talking
about. Sorry, yeah, I realise that now.
This is the meltdown scene. I just, for me, this just, I don't know whether maybe it's sort of Scrooged. Maybe I've watched Bill Murray in too many boardrooms having meltdowns. Maybe I just feel like, you know, I think Joseph Gordon-Levitt's great. I just think that another actor, maybe with more comedic chops, could have really milked this scene. Like the bit where he's talking about the woman's cat.
Yeah,
like,
Rhoda's work is shit.
It just feels like it needs to be like funny meltdown and then sad at the same time.
Yeah.
Mm. Agreed. Okay, so day 450, more stuff from Rachel, his little sister. I know you think she was the one, but I don't. I think you're just remembering the good stuff. Next time you look back, I really think you should look again. They go to see The Graduate together, and we see that ending while Simon and Garfunkel plays, and she cries. Now, interestingly, in the behind the scenes, they told Zoe that 3 days previous to this date is when she'd met the new guy.
Right.
She's got the book. They told her how they met, and she's already kissed someone else. So that's why, which I didn't really appreciate watching the film because it's not in the film. But so she's already two-timed him, and that's why she's crying there, because I guess she knows it's over and she's got to break up with him. And that's when he tries to hold her hand, and she doesn't want to hold his hand. And he suggests pancakes, and that takes us back to that argument earlier in the film. So now his life sort of starts changing. Day 456 to 476, he's doing architecture. We get an architecture montage.
Great.
He's following his dream. Did the girl make him do this? Is it the girl's reason? Is the girl why he's doing this?
Yes. Because he's broken up with her and he needs a change.
He's having a self-realisation?
Because he's broken up with someone.
Okay. Yeah. So Joseph Gordon-Levitt talked about this on Twitter because people were sort of arguing that...
People think Summer's the hero. Summer's the villain, he's the hero. That's what he gets frustrated with.
No, people... I think people think that Summer is the villain. Or at least that was what he was responding to in this tweet. And he said, well, let me just read the tweet and then we can make our own minds up. He says, watch it again. So he was responding to a fan's condemnation of Summer with the instructions, watch it again. It's mostly Tom's fault. He's projecting. He's not listening. He's selfish. Luckily, he grows by the end. So this article on Observer.com goes on to say, similar to Tom's character, Gordon-Levitt himself succumbs to the pitfalls of oversimplification when he explains he, Tom, grows by the end. This effectively frames the film in terms of Tom's personal growth, ultimately neglecting Summer's character entirely. As a result, Gordon-Levitt's response performs the manic pixie dream girl trope in its explanation.
Yeah.
Yeah. But this film is not about her at any point, though. Scott did say it was pitched to him, why don't you write a sequel showing the film from Summer's point of view?
Good idea.
And he says, I couldn't because I've lived this and I actually didn't listen to her at all.
I have no idea
So I have
is.
No idea who she is. Yeah, and he also says, I think in Summer's version, Tom would be in maybe 5 scenes. So I'm glad he's got that self-awareness.
Sure. He does know her because she's a bitch.
She's a bitch. Yeah.
He put it at the start, right up front.
But they pull the split screen trick again. He's job hunting while she's getting married. And then we're into the final straight. It's day 488 and Summer's sitting on a bench behind Tom. She was hoping to see him. And they have this, very sad conversation. He finds it hard to congratulate her. He says, you should have told me at the wedding. He does call her out on it. He says, I don't think I'll ever understand you not wanting to be someone's girlfriend, but now someone's wife. And she says...
Get over it.
Well, he's obsessed.
And also, you say get over it, but she has gone to seek him out to sit behind and wait. She had presumably more than once when he didn't turn up in the hope of seeing him there to have this conversation. So also, just move on, Summer. Move on. Leave him alone. I don't think this conversation needs to happen. He would get over you without having to have this conversation.
Yeah.
So here's a question. Is she really there?
Oh, nice.
Are any of us really here?
No. What?
What do you mean?
Is this a figment of his imagination that she's at his bench sitting, giving him the answers that he needs at
this
point? Is
he self-realised enough to make a projection that tells him the one thing he absolutely has to hear, but it's the hardest possible thing for him to hear?
And I think...
Did we not do this on Monday?
That's why we've paired them.
Right.
Sorry, you paired them.
That's why you paired them.
But she says, I just woke up one day and I knew what I was never sure of with you. And they get that line where he says, now I don't believe in destiny and true love, all that stuff. And she laughs because now she believes in that stuff. She said, it just wasn't me that you were right about.
Oof. It's brutal. But it's so realistic.
Yeah. And she leaves and he says, I really do hope that you're happy. And he means it.
And also props to her character as envisaged by him for not doing the whole it's not you, it's me thing. Because she's kind of saying that, as in it was, but it's basically, it is also mostly you. Because when you fall in love and it's just, the lightning bolt and all the rest of it, you can't describe it. It's like, that's not what we had. Mm. Sorry, I can't think of another way of saying it.
Yeah.
So people dress it up with, there's something wrong with me and, I need to work on myself and all the rest of it. But it's good. I don't think he seems grown up enough to be able to say that to himself. So I think she is there.
Okay. But I'm sure she's there.
I don't know, because does she go every day? Like, she's got stuff to do, presumably.
We've just got married. Where are you going to sit on a bench
with my
to
ex-boyfriend?
See my ex?
No, I don't think you should do that.
I'm going to go on the honeymoon on my own. I've got to go to the bench.
And then we're into day 500. Tom's got a job interview at... a building that we know from another movie, Alex. Do you recognise that building?
Yes, it is from... God!
I mean, it's from a lot of films, but
Inception.
I'm thinking there's one. Maybe. It's the Bradbury building from Blade Runner.
Damn it.
How is it?
So he meets the competition while he's waiting to be interviewed, and she's fit.
She's fit. She doesn't say too much.
She has upgraded.
Do you think so?
I don't know. I'd be happy with either.
Horses for courses.
but he asks her out, and Scott says, this is the point of the film. He said, it's not much of an arc for our protagonist, but there is an arc.
Yes.
And the arc is, it's a guy who can't ask a girl out becoming a guy who can ask a girl out. That's what he believes he wrote.
That's not what the arc is.
No, that's what he reckons it is.
The arc is that, just like in Eternal Sunshine, which is why we paired them, Eternal Sunshine, he's about to do the whole fucking thing again.
So is this
it's the look at the camera at the end. It's like, here we go again, again.
and they sort of nail it by calling her Autumn as well.
Yeah.
Are we saying that?
Wah, wah, wah.
So that would suggest he hasn't changed.
His thing is the job. It's very reductive and plays into tradition, which I hate, which is Summer's arc is, I won't get married, I got married, and then I can't get a job, I got a great job, because why can't she have a great job? But I think the way that she's played, you think Summer probably does have a great job somewhere in the background, because she seems quite head screwed on and all the rest of it. So she gets the thing she needed, which she couldn't do, which was true love. Mm. And he gets the thing he needed, which he couldn't do, which was knuckle down and understand that his future was as an architect or whatever. Mm. So they both help each other in the right way. So that's fine. That's good.
So he's grown. So maybe he isn't going to do the same thing again because he's in a better place.
I think a man that trains as an architect and then is like, actually, I'm fine kicking it, doing greetings cards for 5 years. There's something gone wrong there. Like, that's such a waste. And, you know, with all rom-coms, you're just meant to have this like irrefutable spark of talent, blah, blah, blah. So he's grown enough to face rejection and failure, and he might not get this job interview because Autumn's fit, so she might get it. So you don't know.
That's how it works.
That's how it works. It worked for you.
2009, man.
So we're saying it's a happy ending, and it isn't just going to be Amanda Fuller and Summer all over again.
I don't know. I thought it was.
Yeah.
And honestly, this is what I like about both these films. It's that they've both got this ambiguous ending where it could go either way.
Here we go again. Again.
And then the clock goes back to day one while She's Got You High by Mum Ra plays. Good tune.
Really loudly.
Mum Ra. Wow. They came and went in a fun hot minute. Bloody hell. I'd forgotten about them. They were quite a late addition to the indie scene. Like, very late. Like, late noughties?
Yep.
Wow, are you listening to Mum Ra?
I think not listening to Mum Ra, listening to this song, but I think this is the song that this film introduced me to rather than me being into them.
Where did Mum Ra come from? The name?
Thundercats.
Thundercats.
Yeah. Mum Ra, the ever living.
So, back to...
You're a details guy, you really are.
Sword of Omens, give me sight beyond sight.
Oh my God. I remember that.
So back to
every episode, though, I'm pretty sure at least nine episodes of Thundercats involved Wile E. Kit and Wile E. Cat getting stuck in a hole, and like they had to find them. It just happened too many times.
That is true.
And do you remember the very first episode of Thundercats where, before they got their costumes and became the Thundercats, they were naked? But they had no genitalia, like the toys they were based on.
No, I don't remember that.
So do you want to know what happened with Jenny Beckman?
Yeah, did she sue the fucking arse off it?
No, she read the script and said it was fine. Mm. But he said she probably did that not thinking it would actually get made.
Yeah,
but then it got greenlit, and then it got cast with movie stars, and then it got made, and then it came out. And he said the day it was released, she deleted him from Facebook.
Good for her.
Really?
And I think he might be in touch with her again now, but he won't talk about it anymore.
Well, because he needs a sequel, doesn't he? So.
Of course she deleted him. I can't believe she approved bitch at the start.
She would have no way of knowing.
No, there's no way. I can't believe he did that. I assume.
They had to run it by her legally, so.
But you can put a title card on the first page of a script, but it's also a little bit of a gauche thing to do, so you might not. Because it's a nice to have, but it's not integral.
But we don't know.
Did they show her the film before they released it?
No.
Okay, so it wouldn't have been in the script.
We don't know, Alex. It might have been in the script.
It won't have been in the... Okay, fine.
We don't know.
Honestly, when I first watched it, until like I did a little bit of research, not a lot, not as much as you, a little bit, I thought it was a made-up name.
Yes,
I thought
so
it, I thought it
yes.
was to make it seem like
that.
A real
yeah.
story.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So I, even today, I didn't know she, I knew that it was based on a real person, but I didn't know it. Her name was actually Jenny
Neither
Beckman.
Did I. Can, yeah, and I can. Still hated it because it undercuts everything you're about to see because it's like, you haven't learned a thing. This yeah. woman was telling you the truth. She's not a bitch. She was telling you, she'd been honest. And she made some mistakes, like we all do.
Yeah.
Don't call her a bitch.
But I think he means it as a joke.
Yeah,
I think
it is it's a
like,
joke, isn't it?
Oh, you bitch. But
he's not saying she's actually a bitch.
It's not funny, though.
It's unnecessarily cruel.
It's the word itself. It's like, you know, just write, I hate you. Like, that's fine.
Yeah.
Doesn't have the same impact, but the word, it's the B word. B word.
So as you said, Joseph Gordon-Levin seems to get a bit frustrated with Tom being seen as the hero of this story. He keeps, I just every few years he seems to have to go do an interview where he says, actually, no, you're reading
that's
it wrong.
That's just the trouble when man writers write their angst as, like you say, casting a puppy, it's actually quite a cute, like weird thing that they've got, like, I like it because I love examining it, but it's tortured man who you, Zach Braff in Garden State is a brilliant example. Jim Carrey in Eternal Sunshine, you wouldn't want to be anywhere near these people, but we put these artistic things that are like, oh, but if you can just get past that, it's actually brilliant. Mm. And so there's something in Tom that makes you want, like, makes people like him and stand up for him and defend him. He's a whining child.
I like it. And I like the fact that I felt like I'd been tricked a little bit that first watch. But Zoe, I don't know if Zoe got it. She thinks maybe they get back together in the future.
Okay.
I saw an interview the other day saying that, so I was a bit disappointed.
Did she seem distracted and busy? I'm filming New Girl. What is it?
Yeah.
Yes, they get back together.
Maybe she's not actually seen the film.
Yeah, because there's no, that's the point of it. There is no spark.
No.
With Clem and Joel, you're like, I kind of get, this is opposites attract, both these films, where actually it doesn't work. And with Tom and Summer, there's just nothing there.
This is a video she recorded 10 years on going around the locations of the film to promote the Blu-ray or something. And yeah, she says that at the end. No, Zoe. Right, should we do the bits and pieces?
Yes.
Vicky. Favourite scene?
I really like the Hall & Oates post-shag musical number. I just found it uplifting.
It's terrific, yep.
But I think it's expectations versus reality. Because I don't think it's too... It's not like it would be tempting to do quite a Michel Gondry thing actually with it and have either one go crazy and mad things start happening and blah, 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 whatever. But his expectations are really kind of modest given what's happened at the wedding and all the rest of it. And the reality is quite crushing, but it's not the worst thing in the world. Like, and it just feels, I don't know. And it just, I daydream, you know, a lot of people, you know, you just daydream about, oh, I'm going to do this and then this and then this. And it never lives up to it. So to see that in film done well, it was very satisfying.
I agree with you totally. I love that musical number, but expectation versus reality, split screen. It's really cleverly put together because you're thinking you're looking at two things at the same time, but you aren't because that's not how these things work. So they've really got to manage which side you're looking at any point. And so I think it's really cleverly put together and it's absolutely gut-wrenching.
Yeah.
Alex?
The Hall & Oates dance sequence, I love it because it's a cartoon bird. Simple things.
And it does capture that moment when you're skipping up the street.
It's great. And I find this film quite maudlin. I find it a little bit like low energy. Like, I know it's meant to be, but like, you know, coming off the back of watching Eternal Sunshine, it's like, it's such a kinetic movie. And this, I know it's intentionally so beige so that Summer pops because she's in blue, but it's so beige. Like, everyone's in beige. The furniture's in beige. Like, how many beige suits did they have to buy for this movie? And so I just, the Hall & Oates dance sequence is just such a literal ray of sunshine in the middle of it.
Pops. Great. Alex, who's your most valuable whatever?
Hall & Oates for providing You Make My Dreams for the dance sequence.
Oh, I nearly picked that, but I thought that was a terrible thing to do.
I'm sorry. It is my favourite moment in the film, and it is that song. So congratulations, Hall & Oates. I'm sorry you weren't in it.
Cruel. Their own fault. One of them pulled out. One of them said they didn't want to do it. Vicky.
Zooey Deschanel. Because I've gone on a huge journey. When I first watched it, I was like, oh, God, fuck that girl. I can't be bothered with all of this. Hate Manic Pixie Dream Girls. She clearly is one. And then I watched it again and she isn't. And because she does have, as an actor, a very well-established line in Girls Like That, you go into it now, later, after New Girl, thinking that everything Tom does and projects onto her makes sense because of who she is as an actor. And people have got, like you say, she's this totemic Manic Pixie Dream Girl. And so for me to go in with all of those bias and assumptions, having seen it once and thought that's what I'd seen, and knowing her as that, as an actor, and she completely won me over. Like, she does make some mistakes and she doesn't treat him brilliantly in the middle section. But actually, it's like his blind date says, she was really clear with you. She hasn't really done anything wrong. And I think it's in the performance because she you know, when she's singing Sugartown, oh my God, I hate that, I hate you so much. But then she just pulls it back. She's just reasonable. When she doesn't like the punch in the bar, perfect, all of that. Mm. So yeah, her, she won me over. And she's not a bitch.
She's not a bitch.
No.
But Jenny Beckman, though.
Jenny Beckman's awful. Oh my God.
I'm not going to pick the third cousin of the hairdresser of the assistant stunt coordinator.
Mm. This time.
This time. But I am going to pick the creative team. Production designer Laura Fox, art direction Charles Varga, set decoration Jennifer Lukart, and costume designer Hope Hannafin. Because I do like the colour scheme. Mm. I like the monochromatic palette so that summer's blue really pops. And it gives it a timelessness, I think, those fashions do. And Mark Webb said he wanted the film to look like a slightly dogged romantic novel that you find on a shelf. And I think they have sort of captured that quality. I think it looks amazing. And I think, the film won't date because of that. So I do like the way this film looks, Alex. I'm sorry.
That's fine. That's fine. I get what he was trying to do. He says it's the movie version of a pop song, which is why they put the 500 in parentheses at the start to make it seem like a pop song title.
That is annoying. would you change anything, Alex? If so, what? Apart from removing the word bitch.
Are we not allowed that? That is my change. Yeah. I just don't think you can start the film like that. I think fundamentally it puts a bad taste in your mouth that unfortunately, like watching it for the first time in 2022, like I think if I'd seen it in 2009 and that had been the start, I might have gone, oh, all right.
Yeah.
But then that combined with like questions that I have about sort of like, I don't know. I don't think I've quite made my peace with really understanding the idea of whether Zooey Deschanel's character, Summer, is in fact an interesting expression of the manic pixie dream girl trope, because that is like we're analysing that. We're showing that through Tom's gaze. So she is, whether she just actually is, and I don't know which it is. And so I find that confusing.
Sure.
Vicky?
I think there's too much music. Mm. And I don't pick on the music very often, but it is like being smothered by a mixtape.
And I like all the music in it too. It's my music taste, and yet I find it very annoying.
I like the music, and I do like some Smith songs even, it's just too much.
It's too on the nose.
Yeah. And it's just like every moment, like, do you know what it put me in mind of, which is not the same thing? But when we did Wolf of Wall Street, and we were talking about that moment where Jordan Belfort, the helicopter gets shot out of the sky when the ship has crashed.
Yeah. Oh, the plane, yeah.
So he's sitting there and everything's gone to shit and his wife and his wife's friend are dancing around and he's having a bit of a moment and we don't get to sit with those feelings because he's like, oh, look, something just exploded. Mm. And so these characters don't ever get time to just sit and go, all right, that's just happened, because then it's like, bum, 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 like just play the temper trap 15 fucking times. Mm. So you don't ever get a minute to go, oh, okay, you know, I feel this with you. There's just too much. And it's either that or this sassy sister thing is jarring as. So that's got to go.
Yeah, and I've got an issue, not with that specifically, but I say this film tricks me, but I think it sort of does a false thing with the trickery, because the film is him telling, I think the idea is he's telling the story of these days when that night he's smashing the plates and his sister comes round and his friends are there.
Right.
And we're going back through these days that night. But the point is, that's his sister and his best friend. So they know all of this.
Yeah.
So that's why when the first time I watched it, I wasn't buying that we were seeing his memories of Summer. I thought we were seeing Summer for some of these scenes. And so I think he needs to be telling a stranger his story. And then I'm fully buying into it. Oh, yeah. And this is all in his head. But when it's
though, because that would mean that what happened in Forrest Gump might all have been in his head, because he's telling a stranger his story.
Mm.
But that definitely happened.
I don't think it did.
Hot take.
Wow. Holy shit, we need to do Forrest Gump again.
Yeah.
Again.
All right, but not Big Fish this time. We'll do Benjamin Button.
Yeah, that would be a great pairing.
That wasn't my idea.
It wasn't my idea either.
And I ran it by you both. I was like, Benjamin Button or Big Fish? Anyway, that's my change. So that's it. We're done.
Great.
Mm.
You ready for the verdict?
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
Yep.
Yes. These are my choices. There you go, I've done it. Fine, just stop staring. You make it really hard. These are my choices. And so, what a week. I'm just embellishing. Let's see. I think that Alex should go first.
Oh, I'll keep it very brief. I missed the boat on 500 Days of Summer. And I think that robs it of the thing that would really give it a fighting chance for me this week, which is the nostalgia factor. I think if I'd seen it in 2009, I'd be bringing something else to the conversation today. Watching it for the first time this week, it doesn't stand a chance. For me, it's Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind through and through.
Okay, I think I'm going to go next then, if that's all right. Yeah. Because I was really surprised at myself. I fully expected me to go for Eternal Sunshine because of the hook underneath it. All that original idea is very, very compelling. And 500 Days of Summer, all it's got is boy and girl see things differently. But despite my initial misgivings, I think their relationship is more relatable in the things they say and do, to be quite basic about it. And the stylized stuff, I mean, you know, Michelle Gondry is obviously fairly peerless, but I think 500 Days of Summer is a really good go, and it's just so enjoyable with the musical number. Even that French expressionism film section bit I thought was loads of fun. And I was slightly disappointed with my second viewing of Eternal Sunshine, apart from my redemption of Clementine as a person. I found Joel unknowable, and I think my expectations are super high because with a team that talented and experienced and well-known, to not give me a bit of Joel's life, to give me those two memories of shame and humiliation that are really basic, even if it's intentional, just felt like a letdown. So I'm going to vote for 500 Days of Summer.
Interesting.
Ooh,
so
it's good that I'm back, right?
Now yeah. Actually got it makes this bit a lot easier. Yeah.
Slamming it back to me. Right, so I think 500 Days of Summer is much smarter, much better film than it's given credit for. But I think Eternal Sunshine is genuinely profound. I think it's got depth that just isn't there in 500 Days of Summer. And I think it's genuinely disturbing. I think it's incredibly moving. And I feel like Eternal Sunshine imprinted on me in a way that few other films have. I think it's a really incredible achievement. So it's 100% winner for me this week. Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Woo! Love it.
Okay.
Oh, no.
No, it's fine. No, it's the right
Why
decision.
Why did you say okay like
no,
that?
No, it's the right decision.
You know when you say okay and you sort of breathe in at the same time? Okay.
It sounds painful.
It means you're not happy.
No, I'm fine. I think it's the right thing. I wanted it to get a vote because I was really surprised at how different I felt.
But the winner is Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. So congratulations to everyone involved in that. I know they listen. With that decided, let's turn our attention to next week. Alex, what you got for us?
Oh, man, what was my clue? My clue was The Boy Who Lived versus The Man Who Ran. So the films we're doing on next week's show are The Man Who Ran is obviously The Running Man versus The Boy Who Lived, Harry Potter, Daniel Radcliffe, Guns Akimbo. Yeah, that's right, boy. Guns Akimbo versus The Running Man are my picks for next week.
Excellent. Good job. Looking forward.
They're
to
available
that.
All over the place.
They're all over the place. Yep. We did check. And that really is your lot. Do follow us at Clash Pod on the socials if you can. And if not, make sure you've done a subscribe or a review, as they make Vicky happy, and who doesn't want to make Vicky happy?
Okay.
As ever, thanks for listening, and we'll be back on Monday with The Running Man.
I didn't even know I did that.
This was a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit. And he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house? How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we'll weigh around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.